We present My Music, a musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Shrine. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
You'll be expecting me to tell you that the cast of My Music is unchanged, and so it is. That means John Amos and Frank Muir versus Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. John Amos, you first. John, what begins portentously like this, and when, within, say, 10 years either way, did the world first hear it? John.
It's the overture from La Forza del Destino by Giuseppe Verdi.
That's right. When did the world first hear it?
Well, I know where it heard it.
Yes, where?
St. Petersburg.
Yes, St. Petersburg. The date?
1858.
Near enough. 1862. Very good. Very good. I had a card from a listener named S.C. Vesey to say that a Chelmsford local paper announced a performance of that opera as The Force of Density. Frank, not exactly hi-fi digital stereophony, this, for the very good reason it was recorded in the year 1911. Who, please, was the singer and who wrote the song?
Little lonely day, dream, trying to find a home, so now you know. And when you go, you'll see there's something on her mind. Don't think it's you, 'cause no one's got to kiss that gal but me.
Case no one's got to kiss that girl, me.
Wonderful thing,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes. Lovely, stately tempo. Wonderful. Yes. And who was he, do you know?
Yes, I think it was Eugene Stratton.
That's right, Eugene Stratton. And the songwriter? His real name was Thomas Barrett, but he had an assumed name. And he also wrote... Dun, da, dun, bum, bum,
bum, dun, Leslie bum, Stewart.
Bum. Leslie Stewart. Very good, yes. Eugene Stratton singing Leslie Stewart's song. 1911. Ian, there are certain singers whom I'm very proud to have accompanied. Among them, yourself.
Thank you.
Pleasure. I also accompanied this next gentleman once. It must have been, I think, one of his last appearances. I don't know, perhaps I put him off with my harmonies.
I've just been elected as mayor of the old-fashioned town of Dyke, where half of the folks do no work, and the other half do as they like. I've had great distrust on the square, for they simply thrust me in the chair. Then they place this gold chain on my neck, saying, hail to the Buckham Dyke mayor. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very proud to tell you that at last I have achieved the object of my life, and I am at last mayor of Muscle Dyke. Perhaps you'll let me keep all speaking.
Who was it, Ian?
George Robey.
George Robey.
Who once looked down from the stage of Gildersgreen Hippodrome, where my father was in the front row, and said to my father, "Goodness me, eyebrows just like mine." Which possibly, Steve, lovely, looking at me, you can understand.
Yes, that's right. It was Sir George Robey, CBE. Yes, real name George Edward Wade. And that record was made in 1907, the mayor of Mudcombe Dyke.
I thought you played very well there, Steve.
Thank you. Dennis, this is rather later. It's George Gershwin at the piano playing one of his own songs and reminding us, I think, of how slowly he didn't want this tune to go. Dennis, title and show of that?
Well, as someone to watch over me,
yes.
I know that you're as much a fan of the book by Ira Gershwin,
yes, his brother,
as I am. And if you remember that he writes about someone to watch, they wrote it for the show OK.
That's right.
And it was written, I always found it was interesting, it was written as a jazz dance number. Mm. And was in the show as a jazz, or was due to be in the show as a jazz dance number, and they try, and he just happened to play it more slowly one day while they were just chatting,
yes.
And one of them said, "Oh, it sounds better that way," and therefore it became a slow number ever after.
Meanwhile, he'd recorded that.
Yes,
I think in 1926 the show was okay. Miscellaneous questions with even more miscellaneous answers, I should think. John, this will, I think, challenge your knowledge a bit. What was commended in 1928 by Tovey, Damrosch, Glazunov and Nielsen? The year is significant.
Yes, it was the symphony by Atterberg.
Yes, you got it.
There was a competition arranged by the Columbia Graphophone Company, not gramophone, graphophone, for a Schubert, for a symphony, yes. On the centenary of Schubert's birth. And this man called Kurt Atterberg won it with a very good symphony.
Excuse me, the centenary of Schubert's death, not birth.
Death, that's
right.
1928, yes. And
I am sorry.
Didn't know he was poor. Go on, John.
No, I shan't. No. I mean, Schubert wrote an unfinished symphony. Why should I finish the story?
Well, the people I mentioned, Tovey, Damrosch, Glazunov and Nielsen, were among the adjudicators. They made it the winner of the Schubert Centenary Competition. And Beecham, of course, conducted it on records.
Yep.
And who knows anything about Atterberg's Sixth Symphony now?
I do. It starts da-da-da-da-da-dum-bum-bum, and everybody found that it was a take-off of number 39 of Mozart.
Yes. Gosh.
At least the last movement does.
Yes, right. Talking of Mozart, Frank, what did Mozart and Dittersdorf both become in 1770, when Mozart was 14? Actually, there is a certain kind of link with John McCormack.
They became counts. Well, he did. I mean, Count John McCormack.
You're on the right line.
Count of the Holy Roman Empire.
Yes, that's
Knight
right.
of St. Columbus.
Well, they became papal knights. Mozart and Dittersdorf, made so by Pope Clement the 14th. And John McCormack, of course, became a papal count later on. A half mark.
They played in a string quartet together.
Mm. Dittersdorf
and his name was Ditters von Dittersdorf, which I think is a nice stuttering title.
Yes, yes indeed. Ian, in Mozart's Champagne aria, there's a lot of talk about wine heating the blood and things like that, but what are Don Giovanni's guests actually offered?
They are offered confetti, and they are offered gelati, and they are offered caffè, coffee, and ice creams, and sweets.
Mm, chocolate, things like, yes.
Oh, chocolate.
They're certainly not offered anything that really heats the
blood. There's no, in the offer when the peasants arrive in the ballroom, there's no talk of booze at all.
No, not at all. Dennis, a certain popular record album, actually a double LP, sold over 30 million copies, thereby quintupling the previous record sales figure for an LP. What on earth could that be?
I take it we're out of the realms of Mozart and Dittersdorf.
Regrettably, yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Even Dittersdorf never sold 30 million LPs.
Would it be the Bee Gees?
It would. And the soundtrack from?
Well, Saturday Night.
Yeah.
Fever. I had somebody refer to the Bee Gees. I'm trying to think who it was, so as to give them due credit. As disco's answer to the Chipmunks.
Yes. It was Saturday Night Fever, the soundtrack LP, the Bee Gees, three English boys who grew up in Australia, and they wrote the songs in a week. So it was a pretty profitable week. There's a slight change in the piano medley this week, in that I don't want the titles of the tunes, I want, please, the people or the shows they represent. In other words, whose signature tune, whose theme music? John and Frank, the first four, 1, 2, 3, 4. Ian and Dennis, the remaining four, 5, 6, 7, 8. Right. Right. Thank you. The first one, John.
Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy, yes, half a mark. Then the next one.
Flan and Swanders.
Yes.
Well, Swan and Flanders.
No, we're not there. No, not their signature tune.
Ian Wallace.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yes. And then...
Isn't that something to do with Apocalypse? I mean, they used it in that, didn't they?
Well, they did.
Is that what you mean? Or would you mean Richard Wagner's signature tune?
Whose signature tune? I mean, which group of ladies would expect
the
to be announced? Yes, thank you.
That's too easy.
Isn't it? No. I feel now I can rest content for the rest of my life because Frank has answered a Wagnerian question that John has failed. and then the fourth one...
Didn't hear it.
It's the one I played again. That one. Do you know? Do you know, Frank?
No.
No. Duke Ellington's signature tune, Take the A Train.
Right, didn't play that.
One and a half out of two, Ian and Dennis.
Da, 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 da.
What was the first
one? Oh, well, that's Rhoda Morgenstern's.
Yes, Rhoda.
Rhoda.
Rhoda TV sitcom series, yeah. That's right.
And that's a lovely one, the next one.
Yes, lovely tune.
Yes, In Our Loveness. It's Burns and Allen.
Get you to sing that sometime in one of these programmes. We must do. Maybe next year. Yes. Burns
like
and Allen show, yes, the song's The Love Nest.
Yeah.
Then came...
It's the only one I got on our side, The Muppets.
The Muppets, that's right. And they...
I got one of the ones on the other side.
Well, that's the end bit of Hello Again, We're on the Radio.
Signature
tune. Geraldo's.
Geraldo's Orchestra signature tune. You've got two marks out of two. And we go now to first names, as in John, Frank, Ian, Dennis, or for that matter, Steve. John, the first name, or pre-name anyway, of the composer Martinu.
Bohuslav.
Oh. You may think he's kidding, but he's right. Bohuslav, that's right, Bohuslav. Martinu. Frank, no help from John, please. Kodai, first name of Kodai.
Kodai?
Yes.
Kudalai. Kodai. Dudley.
Dudley could.
Kodai. No,
I'll give you a clue. A Leonine.
Eastman Kodai.
a Leonine name.
What?
A Leonine name, I think.
Zoltan.
Yes, Zoltan Kodai. You've got it.
My Zeds doctor. Were coming at me from the audience Zoltan. Like small arms flying.
Ian, every day of your life you have cause to mention Shostakovich, if only across the breakfast table to your wife. What was his first name?
Shosta.
Shostakovich. Ah, oh, nice thought, yes. You have two to choose from, because, of course, there's his son also in music.
If I got two to choose from, that makes it even less likely that I'm going to get either.
You know, just for interest.
No, I don't.
Shostakovich. Anybody in the audience know? Thank you. Yes. Dmitri Shostakovich.
Ah.
And his son, Maxim. So you didn't get that.
No, I didn't get that.
Proper, aren't they? Then it's part of my job, I always think, is to reassure you that you can, after all, answer questions about classical music. Can you offer, then, a first name, or even a second or a third, for the composer known as C.P.E. Bach? No help from I.W., please.
Clint.
I feel tempted to press you for the P and the E at that rate.
No.
Have a guess, and you'll probably be right. C, P, or E?
Charles?
Yes. No. Well, translate it.
Carl.
Carl, yes. They're Carl Philip Emanuel Bach. Well, I think you've got the mark for that, don't you?
Nearly.
Let's have a quartet of questions about the nature of love. John, love... anatomized in a duet. Who, please, is singing and in what?
Ist denn ihr Weiber
very difficult to fade Mozart because the lovely interrupted cadence there, but he has to go somewhere. The duet from...
Is it from the Magic Toot?
Yes, from the Magic Flute, yes.
Then
who are the characters?
Pamina, yes. And Papageno.
Yes, sung there by Lucia Popp and Tom Cross. Yes. Frank, the question for you is, where is love?
Where is love? Does it fall from skies above? Is it underneath the willow tree that I've been dreaming of?
Frank, where was that song first heard?
Well, originally love was found in a fair enough place in the Mermaid Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Surely.
Yes,
that's right. It was. It's from Lionel Bart's Oliver.
Oliver, that's right. Anybody recognise the singer there? Did you, Dennis?
No, I didn't, actually.
Ketty Lester. Famous record of Love Letters. Anyway, Lionel Bart's Oliver gets you the mark and the Mermaid, yes, and then later at the New Theatre in London. Ian, there's love of women, love of country, even love of food and drink, as in this song.
Brixham, which is Devon Way, and nestling to the sea, you'll see a fisherman old and now who knew Dan Peggotty. Old Shire Soak is what he's called, and when the bells are ringing, when the red boats all draw in their nets, you'll hear Old Shire singing, you'll hear Old Shire singing.
And Frederick Harvey singing there. How old is Silas and where does he come from?
I be now 197, born and bred in dear old Devon.
There's your mark. Yes.
But a much bigger applause for Frederick Harvey's beautiful verse.
Yes. Dennis, still on the subject of love, Cole Porter asked a rhetorical question about love, which Artie Shaw, among others, recorded. Your question, though, is who led this vocal group?
I'm in a mist because I've been kissed by love for you. What can it be that suddenly came over me? What is this thing called love?
Vocal group?
That was the Artie Shaw recording.
Yep.
Will it be the Meltones?
Yes. So?
Oh, well, then it's Meltorme.
Meltorme. Yeah. And still perhaps one of the finest vocal groups ever, the Meltones. Yep. The party piece round, the singing bit. One of the songs will be sung in Latin, two in Anglo-American, and one, a famous Irish song, will be sung in Scots.
Which is mine.
Yes, the Latin one. The titles, respectively, are Laudate Dominum, Once in a While, He Was More Like a Friend Than a Husband, and The Mountains of Morn. The Latin, Latin offerings from John to the music of Mozart. And I'll give you a chord, John.
Start again.
I used to have a record many years ago of Once in a While, sung by Frances Langford. There's a name to conjure with.
Oh, yes. She had a rather funny complexion, didn't she? Like moving porridge. Lovely voice, though. Yes. Quite great.
I'll give you another name to conjure with, Frank Muir. Frank.
No, hang on. This is once. It's a whining, whinging song, very emotional about a lost love. I may break down halfway. Once in a while, will you try to give one little thought to me? Though someone else may be nearer your heart. Once in a while, will you dream of the moments I spent with you? Moments before we two drifted apart. In love's smoldering ember, one spark may remain. If love still can remember, the spark may burn again. I know I'll be contented with yesterday's memory, knowing you think of me once in a while.
Lovely. In an earlier edition of My Music, Dennis sang a song that brought me a lot of letters and him several proposals of marriage. So affecting was it. He was more like a friend than a husband.
Can you just tinkle on the tune a minute, Remind? Right. He was more like a friend than a husband to me. More like a real good pal. Never swore if the dinner was late. Never threw the plate in the grate. At times I forgot we were married. So happy our lives seemed to blend. And no one would think I was only his wife, 'cause he treated me more like a friend. When I did that before, I had a letter after it from a vicar in the north of England who asked if I'd sent him the words because he wanted to use the words as the text of his sermon. I said, I just hope he sang it better than I did.
Many people think that The Mountains of Mourne was written by our prolific old friend Trad or his younger brother Anon. Not a bit of it. The Mountains of Mourne was definitely written jointly by Percy French and Dr. Houston Collison. Right, Ian?
If you say so, Steve.
You're going to sing it anyway. Yes. Mountains of Mourne.
Oh, Mary, this London's a wonderful sight, with the people there working by day and by night. They don't sow potatoes, nor barley, nor wheat, but there's gangs of them digging for gold in the street. At least when I asked them, that's what I was told. So I just took a hand at this digging for gold. But for all that I found there, I might as well be where the mountains of Mourne sweep down to the sea. You remember young Peter O'Loughlin, of course. Well, now he is here at the head of the force. I met him today, I was crossing the Strand, and he held up the street with one wave of his hand. And there we stood talking of days that are gone, and the whole population of London looked on. But for all these great powers, he's wishful like me to be back where dark morn sweeps down to the sea.
Before we leave you, let me just say it's been a pleasure being with you both from our losing team and from our winning team. But we don't have a loser or a winner. This week, it's a tie. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race and the program was produced by Tony Schreiber.